You're listening to ESL Podcast English Cafe, number 371. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 371. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Our website is ESLPOD.com. On it, you can visit our ESL podcast store, which has some additional courses in business and daily English I am absolutely sure you will enjoy. On this cafe, we're going to have another one of our Ask an American segments, where we listen to a native speaker talking at a normal rate of speech, a normal speed. We're going to listen to the speaker and explain what she is talking about. Today we're going to talk about Asian Americans, immigrants who come from countries in Asia to the United States, or their children. We're going to learn a little bit more about Asian immigration to the United States and what it means for this country. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. Our topic on this cafe's Ask an American segment is Asian immigrants. We're going to listen to a woman named Carrie Funk. She's a senior researcher. She's someone who does research investigation into this area. There was a recently, in 2012, published report about Asian Americans called The Rise of Asian Americans. The rise, R-I-S-E, indicates the increase, in this case, of something, or when some person or some group becomes popular or famous or more powerful. We could talk about the rise of a presidential candidate, someone who becomes famous and powerful. Here we're talking about largely the increase in the number of Asian immigrants to the United States. We're going to start by listening to Ms. Funk talk about the characteristics of Asians who are immigrating to the United States, try to understand as much as you can, and then we'll go back and explain what she said. Let's listen.
There is definitely a very highly skilled, highly professionalized immigration, what some have called the brain drain, but you also have kind of a more working class, low-skilled immigration, folks with not a whole lot of education coming as well.
In talking about Asian immigrants, Carrie Funk, says that there is definitely, or certainly, a very highly skilled, highly professionalized immigration. Highly skilled means having the ability to do different things, especially professionally for a job. She uses the word professionalized. Professionalized comes from the word profession, P-R-O-F-E-S-S-I-O-N. A profession is a job. To be professional means to do a very good job, a job that you would expect from someone at that particular level or with those particular responsibilities. Professionalized, I think she's referring here more to levels of education, what we sometimes call the professions. These are certain jobs, such as engineers, computer programmers, doctors, lawyers, and other professions that require a higher level of education. Many of the immigrants from Asia to the United States have a much higher level of education than immigrants from other areas. That's very clear when you look at the actual statistics, the numbers. Ms. Funk says that some people refer to this professionalized immigration as the brain drain. Brain, B-R-A-I-N, is what is in your head. It's what you think with. Most people have a brain. My neighbor, Drain, D-R-A-I-N, is when liquid moves through a small hole, such as in your kitchen sink or your bathroom sink or your bathtub. When the water goes down into the pipes, when the water leaves, we say it drains. To drain, then, means to take something out of somewhere else, in this case, liquid. Brain drain is when a country or an area, a region, loses the best minds. It loses the most educated, most skilled workers. They leave their country and they come to the United States or they go to another country. So the professionalized immigration from Asia is in many ways a brain drain for those countries from which the immigrants came. Carrie says at the same time we see this brain drain, we see another kind of Asian immigration. She says this is a kind of working class, low-skilled immigration. Working class refers to people who perform physical labor, who actually use their hands, their legs, their bodies to do something that requires difficult physical work. Sitting at a computer is not difficult physical work. Working class refers to those who are working in factories, on farms, in mines where they dig out coal, for example. Those are all working class positions. She refers to these as working class low-skilled immigrants. If high-skilled workers are those with a lot of abilities, a low-skill worker would be one who doesn't have a lot of abilities. She says, you also have kind of a more working class, low-skilled immigration, folks with not a whole lot of education coming as well. The word folks, F-O-L-K-S, is a very common word in conversational English, or at least it used to be. It refers simply to people. We might more commonly now say guys, G-U-Y-S. But folks can refer to people in general. It can also refer specifically to ordinary people, not rich people, not famous people. Ordinary folks, we might say, ordinary people. Folks can also refer to your parents. My folks are living in Minnesota. Or my folks are going on vacation next week. Folks is your father and your mother. Now let's listen again as Carrie talks about these different types of Asian immigrants.
There is definitely a very highly skilled, highly professionalized immigration, what some have called the brain drain. But you also have kind of a more working class, low-skilled immigration, folks with not a whole lot of education coming as well.
Next, we're going to listen to Carrie talk about Asian immigrant students, the different kinds of students there are, and how we should think about them. Let's listen.
When we think of the Asian American student, whether it is pre-collegiate or in college and beyond, we should have an understanding of their kind of multiplicity of the Asian American student, not only by national origins, whether of themselves or of their parents, for example.
Carrie starts by saying, when we think of the Asian American student, whether it is pre-collegiate or in college and beyond, Carrie uses the word pre-collegiate. Collegiate, C-O-L-L-E-G-I-A-T-E, means or refers to college, the university, where you go after high school, typically for 4 years, or in my case, eight. Pre, P-R-E, means before. So pre-collegiate means before college, which would probably, in most cases, be referring to kids who are in high school, those who are between the ages of, say, 13 and 18, or 14 and 18. That's a pre-collegiate. So she's talking about both students who are not yet in college, or those in college and beyond. Beyond might be graduate school in this case. She says, when we think of these students, we should have an understanding of their kind of multiplicity of the Asian American student. Like a lot of cases when someone's talking, it's not always a complete, perfectly grammatical sentence. That happens to me every day. Carrie says we should have an understanding of the multiplicity of Asian American students. Multiplicity, M-U-L-T-I-P-L-I-C-I-T-Y, comes from the word multiple, which means many. Here, she means there are many different kinds of Asian American students. They're not all the same. That's why she says we need to have an understanding of their multiplicity, not only by national origins, whether of themselves or their parents, for example. National origins refers to the country where you or your parents or your grandparents or someone in your family came from as an immigrant. We speak a lot about national origins in the United States since we have people from so many different countries, especially in a place like Los Angeles. My origin is the place I am from. So I might also say I'm from Minnesota. That's my place of origin. If I were to talk about my national origin, it would be Ireland and Germany, mostly from Ireland. That's where my ancestors were from. Well, not all Asian Americans come from the same country. And even so, knowing the country is not always enough information to understand the student and their problems, whether it's of their parents or of themselves. Let's listen to Carrie one more time.
When we think of the Asian American student, whether it is pre-collegiate or in college and beyond, we should have an understanding of their kind of multiplicity of the Asian American student, not only by national origins, whether of themselves or of their parents, for example.
Finally, Carrie's going to tell us about how the U.S. education system, our schools here in the U.S., should respond to the increasing number of Asian Americans. Let's listen.
I think the educational system has tried to be more aware of the changing demographics and to be more culturally competent. And when I say culturally competent, it gets back to the other point that I was raising earlier, We're also talking about socioeconomic differences in Asian immigration to the United States. So it's important for us not to think of, you know, every child who is Asian American as having parents who work for a Fortune 500 company and being English-speaking and highly educated in that way.
Carrie says, I think the educational system has tried to be more aware of the changing demographics and to be more culturally competent. She thinks the educational system, the school system, has tried to be more aware of the changing demographics. To be aware of means to notice, to pay attention to. Demographics, D-E-M-O-G-R-A-P-H-I-C-S, here refers to the characteristics of the people. Demographics is a study of people and the characteristics of a certain population, usually involving some sort of statistical or numerical information. It could be information about their sex or who's male and who's female, age, race, skin color, national origin, and more. All of these would be topics you would find in the study of demographics. She says that the school system is more aware of the changing demographics, the fact that students in the schools are changing in terms of their backgrounds, their characteristics, and that the schools are becoming more culturally competent. To be competent, C-O-M-P-E-T-E-N-T, means to be able to do something, to have the skills to do something. Culturally refers to understanding the different ways that people behave and the different things that they believe in different cultures and different areas in the world. So to be culturally competent means to have an understanding of the different cultures of your students. At least that's what I think she's talking about here. Carrie then says that when she says culturally competent, it gets back to the other point that I was raising earlier. She's saying that this discussion of cultural competency gets back to or refers to another point, another idea that she was talking about, that she was raising earlier. She says we're also talking about socioeconomic differences in Asian immigration to the United States. Socioeconomic refers to how much money a family makes, what their social position is in a society or in an area, what other people think of them, their education is involved in that. Socioeconomic is a term that we use a lot in talking about schools to refer to the backgrounds, the economic backgrounds of our students, what their parents do for a living, where they live, what kind of ideas are communicated within the family about economics and work. All of these things are related to socioeconomics, but the most important thing is how much money do they have? The economic part is more important than the socio part, typically. She says, it's important for us not to think of every child who is Asian American as having parents who work for a Fortune 500 company and being English speaking and highly educated in that way. The general perception that a lot of people have of Asian Americans in the United States is that they are well educated and that their children do very well at school. This is, in general, true, but what Kerry is talking about here is that that's not true for all Asian Americans, that there are Asian Americans who don't come from what she calls Fortune 500 companies, or whose parents don't work for a Fortune 500 company. Fortune is the name of a famous business magazine in the United States, and the Fortune 500 refers to the 500 biggest companies in the U.S. She's saying here that not every Asian American child has a parent who works for a big company and makes a lot of money and is English speaking and highly educated. Statistically, it's true that most Asian immigrants are more educated than non-Asian immigrants. But as Ms. Funk is pointing out here, that's not true for all students. And so schools have to recognize that there are differences in the Asian American population. Now let's listen one last time as Kerry talks about this topic.
I think the educational system has tried to be more aware of the changing demographics and to be more culturally competent. And when I say culturally competent, it gets back to the other points that I was raising earlier. We're also talking about socioeconomic differences in Asian immigration to the United States. So it's important for us not to think of, every child who is Asian American as having parents who work for a Fortune 500 company and being English speaking and highly educated in that way.
Now let's answer some of the questions that you have sent to us. Our first question comes from Domenico, D-O-M-E-N-I-C-O, in Italy. Domenico wants to know the meanings of three different verbs, to note, to notice, and to notify. Let's begin with to note, N-O-T-E. As a verb, to note means to write down, usually in order to remember something. I need to note the time for my next doctor's appointment. I need to write it down so I don't forget. To note can also mean simply to observe, to realize what is happening. Here it means the same as notice. Note the beautiful colors used in this painting. Pay attention to them. Look at them. Be aware of them. That's what we're saying in this definition of note. Note can also be a noun. It can mean a short written reminder of something. We often in school tell our students to take notes. To take notes means to write down the important information of what the teacher is saying. Of course, kids do take notes, and then they write notes to their friends and pass those notes or give them to their friends. Of course, those aren't usually about what the teacher was talking about. The verb to notice, N-O-T-I-C-E, means to be aware of, to realize. It's similar to the second definition of note that I just gave you. Notice the colors in this painting. Did you notice that my brother got his hair cut? Notice can also be a noun meaning an announcement, usually a formal or more official announcement or piece of information. We talk about giving notice or giving your notice when you decide you are going to quit your job. That's a note or a letter you give to your boss saying that I'm going to be leaving in 2 weeks or in 1 month. To notify, N-O-T-I-F-Y, means to tell someone something, to give them notice, to notify is often used in a more formal way when you are contacting some government office or the police or someone who has some sort of official capacity. I'm going to notify the police of the problems we have on this street. I'm going to notify my boss that there is a problem with this contract. Our next question comes from Zbyszek, Zbyszek, in Poland. The question is about the difference between the word assessment and appraisal. Assessment, A-S-S-E-S-S-M-E-N-T, is any time that you evaluate or you decide how good something is or how valuable something is. We typically use assessment in places such as school when we're talking about testing students, giving them a test to see how much they've learned. That's one kind of assessment. You could also make an assessment of a situation in a business. You look at it, you decide what the main problems are, what the solutions are, perhaps how much something will cost. Those are all possible assessments. Appraisal, A-P-P-R-A-I-S-A-L, usually refers to only an assessment of the value of some physical good or some piece of property. You could have a bracelet appraised. You could get an appraisal for the bracelet or a watch or a ring or a house. These are all sort of official formal estimates, assessments of how much something is worth. Assessment is a more general term. It can describe looking at the details and figuring out the value or the status of just about anything. Appraisal usually refers specifically to how much money something is worth, especially a piece of jewelry or a house. Assessment, however, can also be used when talking about real estate, that is, houses and buildings. We can talk about an assessment as a type of tax that the government puts on a certain piece of property. Technically, the assessment is not the tax. The assessment is the government's guess, estimation of how much the house is worth, how much the property is worth. And based on that assessment, you have to pay a certain amount of tax back to the government. Appraisals, when we talk about real estate, are usually things done by banks or other people who are going to try to give you a loan to buy a house. You need to get it appraised. You need the bank to come out and say, this is how much this house is worth, and therefore we will lend you this amount of money. That's assessment and appraisal. Our last question comes from Mohsen in Iran. The question has to do with the expression to be full of yourself. When we say someone is full of himself or full of herself, we mean that they have a very high opinion of themselves. They're too confident in how good they are. They think that they're much better than they perhaps really are. We interviewed someone for the job, but he was so full of himself, we decided we didn't want to hire him, to have him work at our company. To be full of yourself is usually used informally in more conversational English to refer to someone who is what we might call conceited, C-O-N-C-E-I-T-E-D. To be conceited means the same as to be full of oneself, to think that you are a great person, that you have great abilities, and that you are typically better than other people. There's a very different expression that you don't want to confuse with to be full of yourself, and that is to be full of it, I-T. To be full of it means that what a person is telling you is not true. It's an informal expression, a very informal expression, because the original version of the expression is somewhat vulgar. But the meaning is to be lying. When someone says you're full of it, they're saying you're not telling the truth. You're exaggerating. You're telling me things that are not true. Bob has 5 girlfriends. You'd say, oh, he's full of it. He does not. He's lying. He doesn't have 5 girlfriends. He may have 6 girlfriends, but 5 girlfriends, I don't think so. That's to be full of it. Very different than to be full of oneself. Never use the expression to be full of it in any sort of formal situation or with your mother. If you have a question or comment, you can email us. Our email address is ESLPOD@ESLPOD.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again here on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say. Copyright 2012 by the Center for Educational Development.